Oh, I don't have any idea.
London, May, 1986. Rick Maddock's study. Book-lined classic.
So, what is it? It smells quite disgusting.
The Rick Maddock. Thin, mid-30s, red hair. Brown leather jacket, jeans. Author of the international cult bestseller, The Cabaret of Dr. Caligari.
It's what you were asking for. It's a bezel.
Felix Garrison, a bespectacled junior doctor, holds out what looks like a large lump of calcified hair, covered in slime.
Well, hang on, I thought these things are like precious stones.
Most of them are. This is a trichinobezel. It's made of hair. I cut it out of a young woman's stomach this afternoon. Lovely long hair she had. Trouble was, she'd been sucking it, chewing it, swallowing the hairs. Must have been doing it for years. Technically, that's known as Rapunzel syndrome. Anyway, it's a bezel. Mission accomplished.
Oh, it's disgusting. But thanks. What do I owe you, Felix?
Oh, nothing. It would only have been incinerated or popped into a jar for students to stare at. Just don't tell anyone where you got it. But, I was wondering if you'd sign this for me.
Oh, a first edition of Cabaret.
They're hard to find.
Oh, no. Sure. No problem. For Felix Garrison, with thanks, Rick Maddock. There you go.
This is great. It's a real thrill for me to, you know, be able to do something for one of my heroes. I love the book. Amazing stuff. So, what do you need the bezel for?
Oh, like you were asking the other day, where do writers get our crazy ideas? It's research, really.
I heard you were writing a sequel to The Cabaret. I'm really excited.
Oh, great. That's the phone. Listen, thanks again for the thing.
Hey, no problem. I know how busy you are. I'll just let myself out.
Bye. Richard Maddock.
Rick, it's Harry. Listen, we have to talk. Your publishers were on to me again today.
Oh, hi, Harry.
Listen, the novel's almost 9 months overdue and they're threatening to cause trouble. You're in breach of contract, Rick. Is it finished yet?
It's nearly finished.
Well, how much have you got to go?
It's almost finished, Harry. You can't rush these things. Just another couple of weeks, maybe. Okay? Listen, I am really busy. I'll get back to you, okay?
Okay.
How much of the novel have I written? Honestly? Nothing. Not a word.
The Sandman.
An hour later, Rick Maddock carries a plastic carrier bag up the King's Road in Chelsea. He turns off into a residential street. He stops in the doorway of a terraced Victorian Gothic monstrosity. Unlike its neighbours, this house has not been converted into apartments. It only has a single entry phone button.
Who is it?
Richard Maddock, to see Erasmus Fry.
Help me straight down.
God, this thing stinks.
Are you alone?
Yes, it's just me. I've got it.
Well, come in, dear boy, come in. I'm not sorry that I'm not dressed for visitors. When you get to my age, you don't give a toss what you look like.
Erasmus Fry wears a tartan dressing gown, trousers, and carpet slippers. He has strong features, a shock of white hair, and a dusting of stubble on his chin. He is, or rather once was, a famous playwright and novelist.
Don't just stand there, come in!
The house is claustrophobic and cramped, crammed with bookcases, old statuary, and furniture. They weave past the obstacles, towards Fry's study.
How are you, my boy? Written anything profound and stirring recently?
You know I haven't, Mr. Fry.
No. We'll go into my study, and you can show me my present.
The study is dusty, expensively furnished, and dominated by a large portrait of Erasmus Fry as a young man, which hangs over an empty, cold fireplace. There are two heavy leather armchairs in front of it.
An excuse for a sherry. Take a seat, Maddock.
Thanks.
Cheap stuff, of course. I'm not wasting the good stuff on a little shit like you. Here.
Cheers.
Chin chin. Yes. Let me tell you about bezoars. Word comes from the Persian, padzar. It means counter-poison, antidote, mainly found in the stomachs of goats and gazelles. Once believed to possess mystic powers, they can remedy poison, make the sick well. Edward IV survived the effects of a poisoned wound due solely to a bezoar in his possession. Queen Elizabeth I had a bezoar set in gold with unicorn's horn, given to her by John Dee, her spy and magician. Yes, for the common people, apothecaries would lend out bezoars at extortionate rates for a week or a fortnight.
Will you shut up? I haven't written a word in a year, but nothing I haven't thrown away. Do you know what that's like? When it's just you and this blank sheet of paper and you can't think of a single thing worth saying, a single character that people can believe in, a single story that hasn't been told 1,000 times before.
Of course I know what it's like. Don't be a fool, boy. Let me see my present. Oh, yes. Rapunzel, let down your hairball. A genuine trichinobezoar. The smell comes from the partly digested particles of food trapped in... I'm sorry. I'm lecturing again. An old writer with no one else to talk to gets fond of the sound of his own voice. Come, I will put the bezoar with the rest of them. I suppose that you want her. Now, did you bring any clothes?
Clothes? I didn't know I...
Never mind. I have an old coat you may use.
The stairs are piled on each side with books. The walls bear playbills and posters from years before, all with Fry's name in prominent lettering.
I caught her on Mount Helicon, you know. 1927, Greece. I was 27. She was bathing in the spring, and I caught her and bound her with moly, sorcerer's garlic, as it's sometimes called, and with certain rituals. This way. The hardest part was getting her back to England. They say one ought to woo her kind of thing, but I must say I found the use of force most efficacious. After all, I got the fame and the glory. I created the novels, the poems, the plays. I don't need her anymore, Maddock. And you do. Here she is.
The curtains in the upstairs room are drawn. The room itself is unfurnished, save for an old bedstead with a thin mattress upon which lies a naked woman, not more than 20 years old.
Good God!
The girl looks as if she has been starved for a fortnight. Lit by the single bulb in the hallway outside, the outline of her hip bones and ribs are visible. Her blondish hair is long and unkempt.
Her name is Calliope.
What would you with me now, Erasmus? Am I now to perform for your amusement? Is this man to be our audience?
Don't get yourself all worked up, Calliope. No, this is Richard Maddock. He is a novelist, or at least he's written one extremely successful first novel and has found himself quite unable to write anything else. Richard, this is Calliope.
Hi.
Calliope is one of the nymphs of legend, Richard. Daughters of Zeus. She was the youngest of the 9 muses. Homer's muse, so she ought to be good enough for you. Calliope, I'm giving you to Richard. You're his now.
But you said... You told me, you promised that you would free me before you died. You said I could have my freedom.
Put not your trust in princes, my dear. Nor in an aging author who has never been what one might call a shining example when it came to keeping his word. Writers are liars, my dear. Surely you have realized that by now.
Here, put this coat on. There, that's better. I ought to have brought her some shoes.
She's a goddess, she doesn't need them. Now take the little cow away, Madoc. I never want to see either of you again. However, if you ever happen to feel a spark of gratitude, you might want to persuade some publisher to bring Here Comes a Candle back into print. I was particularly proud of that one.
And Madoc took Calliope back to his home and locked her in the topmost room which he had prepared for her. His first action was to rape her, nervously, on the musty old camp bed he had installed. She's not even human, he told himself. She's thousands of years old. But her flesh was warm, and her breath was sweet, and she choked back tears like a child whenever he hurt her.
Have you had satisfaction?
Do you care?
It occurred to him, momentarily, that the old man might have cheated him, given him a real girl, that he, Rick Madoc, might possibly have done something wrong, even criminal. Afterwards, relaxing in his study, something shifted inside his head.
God. Yes. Yes.
He switched on the word processor to write it down before it fled.
Yes.
Chapter 3. And Some in Velvet Gowns.
Your face, he said to her. What have you done to your face?
Marion shrugged.
I wanted to look on the outside, like I do on the inside, she said simply, not putting down the knife.
He had been writing for 3 hours before he surfaced enough to realize that he had begun his second novel.
Oh, man, this is great.
Up in Madoc's attic room, with the window locked and barred and the door bolted from the outside, Calliope has risen and put back on the old coat she arrived in. She kneels on the bare floorboards, her hands clasped in prayer.
Gracious ladies, mother of the Kameni, hear my prayer. Melete, Nimi, Ioide, attend my supplication. It is I, your daughter Calliope, who calls you as I have called you 1,000 times. I implore you, ladies, deliver me from this place and this time. To whom can I speak in my grief? I who am laden with wretchedness. Ladies of meditation, remembrance, and song, hearken to me.
Right. Enough, beautiful voice. Why do you call us?
We feel your pain, daughter, but we cannot help you.
You were snared upon Helicon according to the mysteries. You are lawfully bound.
But it is not just my mother's. I can bear this burden no more. Is there nothing you can do? No one who can intercede on my behalf?
There are few of the old powers willing or able to meddle in mortal affairs in these days, Calliope.
Many gods have died, my daughter, while aspects of other gods have been lost forever. Only the endless will never die, and even they are having a difficult time of late. Still, every little helps, as the old woman said when she pissed in the sea.
The endless! Now there's a thought. After all, the Dream King and Calliope were close. Long ago. For a short while.
Not for long. And remember, Sister Self, they did not part on the best of terms.
But she did bear his cub. That boy child who went to Hades for his lady love and died in Thrace, torn apart by the Sisters of the Frenzy for his sacrilege.
What of the Lord of the Dream Realm, my pet?
Oh, near us. Not him, not after what he did to me. He hates me for that, and I despise him. I would not accept his help.
Foolish child. Oneirus is in no position to help you, even if he wished to. Which is unlikely, to put it mildly.
You see, just like you, Calliope, your one-time admirer has been ensnared by mortals. And while you are imprisoned in your tower, he is immured beneath the ground.
I am sorry, my little one. Your prayers were wasted. There is nothing we can do for you. And nothing you can do but hope.
No. Please, come back, please. There must be something. There must be someone who can free me. Please. Send someone. Anyone. Even Oneirus.
It had been her own fault. Spring, 1927, Mount Helicon. She had only returned for a brief time, lured perhaps by nostalgia. She had laid down her scroll and was bathing in a clear pool, remembering the lost golden days, when the Nine were still sought and wooed and needed, when the music of the spheres still echoed in mortal souls. He carried a posy of long-stemmed wild garlic flowers, moly flowers, that had power over her kind. In his other hand, he held her scroll.
Hello?
Hello? You should not be here.
Which one are you? You are bound to answer truthfully.
Calliope.
Calliope. Well, you can call me Master.
And then he burned her scroll.
No!
Hey, great news. I finished the novel. It's called And My Love, She Gave Me Light. 2 drafts in 5 weeks and it's all good stuff.
I am pleased for you. Now will you let me go?
Are you out of your mind? This is just the beginning. Come here, gorgeous. Let's make 2.5 minutes of squelching noises.
Please, Madoc, let me go. Stop forcing me to do these things.
Listen, you are my possession until I tell you that you're free. Don't forget it. You are my personal muse, sweetheart. Now, let's party.
Really, John, I don't see any way that a work of genre fiction could be nominated for the Booker Prize.
Well, I feel, in the light of his latest novel, that Madoc's work has to be seen as transcending genre. It's as if it were written by a different man.
May 1987. The launch party for Rick's second book, And My Love, She Gave Me Light. He has dropped the K from his first name. It looks cooler. Literary types throng the room.
Quite remarkable. I mean, the sheer richness of the material.
I loved your characterization of Aileen. There aren't enough strong women in fiction.
Well, actually, I do tend to regard myself as a feminist writer.
June 1987. Producers Club. Mayfair.
Harvey, the only condition under which I'd be willing to do a screenplay for you of And My Love would be if I could direct it.
Let me put this simply for you, Rick. Impossible.
July, 1987.
When they said in the TLS that you could be considered the greatest epic poet since Byron.
It surprised the hell out of me. I saw The Spirit Who Had Half of Everything as a lightweight project between real books. I was honestly surprised when my publisher agreed to take it.
Your place or mine?
Yours.
As ever.
Taxi!
October 1988. Rick's study is now furnished with leather and mahogany. Rick wears designer leisure wear.
Look, Harry, it's nothing that you've done. It's just that the William Morris Agency can look after my interests better. They've got contacts you haven't. But you've still got the first three novels and the poetry collection to handle. Don't be like that, Harry.
February 1989.
Thank you, all of you, so much. You know, when I first told my agent I was planning to write a play, he said, "Rick, you're crazy." So I got a new agent.
April 1989.
Rick, we've been actively discussing your original offer to write a screenplay if we let you direct. I'm pleased to tell you that...
Harvey, it's too late. I've already signed a 3-picture deal in the US, but thanks, you know.
May 1989. Rick Maddock buys a new house in Chelsea. He's busy on pre-production for the film, and most of the moving is done for him.
We go straight upstairs, top floor.
He moves his most valuable possession himself, though, late one spring night. September 1989. The Wake Up America studio.
No, I like Hollywood well enough, but I'm really pleased to be going home. You know, 2 months away is enough for me.
Hi. In case you've just tuned in, I'm talking to Rick Maddock, writer, poet, and soon-to-be film director, about his new epic novel, Eagle Stones.
Coming to two... Cut to two.
October 1989. The Movie Talk Studio.
Cue Danny.
Coming up next, Rick Maddock, writer of the best-selling novel, Eagle Stones, talks to us about his extraordinary new film, and the madness of crowds. And we'll be showing some exclusive footage.
Standby caption.
That's after this short break.
March 1990.
Calliope?
Oh, it's you.
Yes.
They told me that you had been imprisoned. Just like me.
They spoke the truth. I was imprisoned. But as you can see, I am free now.
Then please, Oneiros, by the love I once had for you, by whatever you felt for me, please, make him give me my freedom. Make him let me go.
Later that morning, at BBC Television Centre, West London, Rick is recording a segment for the BBC Two monthly literary discussion programme, Book Nook.
Rick Maddock, although you've been compared to the multi-talented Jean Cocteau, and to a lesser extent to writer-directors like Clive Barker, it seems to me that the creator who perhaps you most resemble is the late 1940s cult figure Erasmus Fry.
Excuse me, Kim. You said the late. He's dead.
Oh, last summer. Did you know him?
I didn't know him. We met on a couple of occasions. He was interested in my work.
Ah. Anyway, like you, Fry was above all a creator of epics, of huge, towering romances. It went very well, I thought. It'll be broadcast in June. We'll let you know the exact date.
Oh, thanks. I suppose Fry must have died when I was shooting in the US. Old age, I suppose. Must have been almost 90.
Oh, no. He poisoned himself. It's quite funny. Apparently, the last thing he did was write a letter to his old publishers, begging them to bring one of his books back into print.
Here comes a candle, I suppose.
I think that was it. How did you guess?
It was a good book. It's perhaps my favourite book when I was growing up. It's very moving and honest and strange. Poor old sod.
Another half? Bite of lunch?
No, thanks. I gotta go.
40 minutes later, in Mayfair, Rick dumps the keys to the Porsche on his hall table. He climbs the stairs to the first floor lounge.
Christ! What are you doing in my house?
The stranger sits comfortably in Rick's favourite armchair. Under the mop of black hair, the long, thin, slightly androgynous face looks grim. There are no eyes, just black shadows with single stars glinting in the sockets. He wears a large black leather jacket with a high collar, thin black jeans, and a jet black t-shirt.
Who let you in?
Nobody let me in. Richard Maddock.
I don't know who you are, but I want you out of here. Now, or I'm calling the police.
Be quiet. You are keeping a woman imprisoned here, Richard Maddock. Keeping her against her will. I have come here to request that you set her free.
Are you out of your mind? There's no woman here. Now, get out of here. Do you know who I am? There's a law against people like you. Are you going to call the police? Is that it?
No. I will not call any human agency. Just let her go.
No, you don't understand. I need her. If I didn't have her, I wouldn't be able to write. I wouldn't have ideas. I can't free her yet. Not now. Maybe in a year or so. Look, I have money. An awful lot of money. And
hold your tongue. She has been held captive for more than 60 years. Stripped of all her possessions, demeaned, abused, and hurt. I know how she must feel. And you will not free her because you need the ideas. You disgust me, Richard Maddock. You want ideas? You want dreams? You want stories? Then ideas you will have. Ideas in abundance.
Rick wakes up. He finds himself sitting in his favorite armchair. He gets up, checking his watch. It is less than 20 minutes since he entered the house. He is alone in the room.
What?
I just had this weird dream. What do you know about it? Huh? Are you doing that? Giving me nightmares? Are you doing it?
Hmm?
Tell me! Tell me, or so help me, I will.
No, I am not doing it, Richard Maddock. You have met Oneiros, the Dream Lord, whom the Romans called the Shaper of Form. He was once my lover, and he was the father of my son.
I didn't know you'd ever had a son.
You know nothing about me, Richard Maddock. I am alive in my own right. I am more than a receptacle for your seed or an inspiration for your tales. Still, it is too late now to let that concern you. Goodbye, Richard Maddock. Enjoy your party.
Standard! Get your standard!
I'll take one. And a timeout, please.
Righto. Boy, I saw you on the telly the other night. I said to my wife, he gets his papers from me. She says, he never. I says, he does. There you go.
Oh, I'm going to a party.
Good on you, mate. I expect it's all parties for you, innit?
You know, I could write a whole story set at a party. Possibly something could have happened to the world outside. A holocaust of some kind. Yes, these people are partying against the darkness.
Here, Mr. Maddock. That's £1.20 you owe me!
The Fraternity of Critics, in reality a dark brethren, linked by profane rites and blood vows. To destroy an author, they sacrifice a child and perform a critical mass.
Are you all right, mate?
A city in which the streets are paved with time.
Let me go.
A train full of silent women plunging forever through the twilight.
Please. He's off his nut.
Heads made of light. A small piece of blue cardboard. A plum, sweet and tart and cold.
He's been at it for hours.
Somebody ought to call somebody.
He's not right in the head. Taking a weasel on holiday. I don't think he's dangerous.
Vampires don't dance. A man who inherits a library card to the library at Alexandria. A rose bush, a nightingale and a black rubber dog collar.
Let me through. Please. I'm a doctor. Stand back, please. Is something wrong? Hello?
Shark's teeth.
Good grief. Richard Maddock. What's the matter, old fella?
I'm just having ideas. So many. An old man in Sunderland who owned the universe and who kept it in a jam jar in the dusty cupboard under his stairs.
My home is just around the corner. Lean on me. Do you remember me? Felix Garrison.
It's the ideas. Where we get them from. A sestina about silence, using the keywords dark, ragged, never.
Come on. Come with me. Fire. Kiss. Come on inside. You'll have to tell me what's the matter. Let's get you warm.
A biography of Keats, from the Lamia's viewpoint. A wall as long as history itself.
Soon have you feeling better. Have a seat. I'll get the lights. God, what did you do to your hands?
All the pictures in my head. I had to get them down, but I didn't have any paper or paints, so I used a wall and my fingertips.
Dear God. Let's see what I've got in my bag.
All the ideas. Inside and all the pictures and the poems and the tales and the songs and the plays and the speeches and the fragments. They're all coming out. You must help me.
I'll give you a sedative. And I'll bandage those fingers.
No! No! I'm sorry. Nothing like that. It's her revenge, you see. Or his. I said I needed ideas. But they're coming so fast. They're swamping me. They're overwhelming me. You have to make them stop.
Here. Take these. They'll calm your nerves.
No! I told you! Look. Go to my house. The keys are in my pocket. If you can take them out for me. I don't think I can use my hands anymore. Go upstairs. Now, at the top of the house, there's a room. There's a woman in there. Let her out. She's locked up in there, you see?
What?
Tell her that she can go. That I free her. Make her leave. Make her go away. I signed a book for you once, didn't I? Oh, God. Please.
All right. Stay there. I'll be back soon.
Make it stop. Tell her I'm sorry. Magical and alchemical tradition seen as a cargo cult. Aureolus, Theophrastus, Bombastes, Paracelsus and Raymond Lully were the same man.
35 minutes later.
Hello? Is there anyone here? He says, Rick says you're free to go. Hello? What's this? Well.
So, it's over. Thank you.
What will you do now, Calliope?
I don't know. Return to the minds of humanity, I suspect. My time is over, and this age of the world is not my age. You have changed, Aneros. In the old days, you would have left me to rot forever without turning a hair. Do you still hate me? For what I did?
No. No, I no longer hate you, Calliope. I have learned much in recent times, and... no matter. I do not hate you, child. Shall we go?
I think you should release the mortal now. He has set me free.
If that is what you wish, it is done.
Maybe.
Maybe I could visit you in the dream realm. It would be nice to see you again. Properly. What do you think?
I do not think that would be a good idea, Calliope.
No. No, perhaps it wouldn't. Thank you anyway, Aniros. I will not forget this. Fare you well, Aniros. Fortune go with you.
Goodbye, Calliope.
I've done it, Rick. How are you feeling now?
I don't know anymore. I keep trying to think about what she said.
This girl.
The Shaper of Forms. It seems like it should mean something.
Rick, look, there was no one there. In the room. There was just a book lying on the floor. Here Comes a Candle by Erasmus Fry.
I don't know. It doesn't connect with anything. It's a name.
The blurb says she was his muse and the slave of his lust.
I wish I could remember. So hard to think. Morpheus? Orpheus? It's one of those.
You can take it with you to the hospital, Richard.
She's gone. You see? It's all gone with her. Everything. All of them. All the dreams. No, I can't remember. I've lost it. It's gone. I've got no idea anymore. No idea at all.